according to the proportion of his faith. If service in his serving, or he who teaches in his teaching, or he who exhorts in his exhortation, he who gives with liberality, he who leads with diligence, he who shows mercy with cheerfulness. Love without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love, giving preference to one another in honor, not lagging behind in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, persevering in tribulation, devoted to prayer, contributing to the needs of the saints, practicing hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. Be of the same mind toward one another. Do not be haughty in mind, but associate with the lowly. Do not be wise in your own estimation. Never pay back evil for evil to anyone. Respect what is right in the sight of all men. If possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. Never take your own revenge, beloved, but leave room for the wrath of God. For it's written, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay," says the Lord. But if your enemy's hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink, for in so doing you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. If you recall, Romans 12, 1 through 2 is this heading that precedes the section that follows. And it's calling us to respond to the gospel with sacrifice, with transformation. We're living sacrifices. We're not conformed to this world, but we're transformed by the renewing of mind. And we're focusing on mentions in verses 9 through 21. And those are written in short, succinct statements. If you think about just the way they're written, the cadence there, they're presented in sort of a rapid-fire procession, just one after the other. And there's power in just hearing them read as we just did. At the same time, though, each statement is just worthy of pause, reflection, meditation. What does this look like practically? And so that's really what our series is about, where we're just going to continue to select one or two statements, just chew on them together, think through, grow through these truths together. So the first lesson we looked at was the very first statement in verse 9, that the way this begins, love without hypocrisy. And for the practical portion of the lesson, we just considered three questions. Do I love in actions or words alone? If we think about this sincere, this unhypocritical love, is it just in my words or in my actions? I can say I love you, but would you know it if I didn't say it at all? Do I love for better or worse? Sometimes things get difficult in circumstances in our life. Will I continue with you and show you that love? And do I love with partiality? You know, there's some people that are easier to love, some people that more naturally get along with. Am I being partial in the love that I show? Tonight we're going to move on to the next part of verse 9, and it's this couplet of statements: abhor what is evil, cling to what is good. And so this, as it flows, is really the moral fabric of this sincere love. If we think about this as our heading, this is the moral fabric that binds these things together. Abhor what is evil, cling to what is good. Ultimately, love without moral conviction is not love at all. And we're going to explore that throughout the study. And as we'll see, and as we just, again, think on these words, abhor what is evil, cling to what is good, these are words we severely need to hear and embody in our current cultural, society, and our religious climate. We just need to really drink these in and fill ourselves up with them. And so let's think about these things more carefully. The word abhor, as you look at this first statement, pretty much all of your translations will say abhor. If you're reading from the NIV, it's going to say hate. But this is to have a horror of. That's the idea behind this, where you have a horror of something. I view with disgust. I shudder. I recoil from. You know, when I see that, I recoil back from that. I despise and I detest. You can't even say this word with a smile on your face. You just there's just a disgust, and there's almost an anger when we say this word. Do we have a sense of what this is? Abhor. This has got to be my mindset. This has got to be my feelings towards what's evil. But at the same time, he says cling. Cling, or translated cleave, or the ESV will translate this hold fast. It's literally gluing or bonding something together. This is the word that you see in Matthew 19. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother, be joined or cleave to his wife. Two shall become one flesh. That's that gluing, that bonding together. So I grab hold of it with all my might and I refuse to let it go. This must be my mindset and my feelings towards what's good. And so it's thinking, it's feeling, it's doing. This is more than just giving up a specific sinful practice. It's transforming the way I think about sin and my feelings towards it. This is more than doing some good things. It's transforming the way I value what's good, and I grab hold of it as if it were the most important thing. I'm just getting hold of these good things. We're called to nonconformity and transformation. First, I want us to think about the nation of Israel. Were they blessed? Did they have blessings from God? You think about them, they're redeemed from this cruel slavery, and they were blessed with this incredible moral law that if they would truly practice what God had given them, they would reflect the light of God in such a dark world. Yet they grew so backwards and twisted in their thinking and practices. And just over and over and over in the Old Testament, you see them going their own way and just perverting what is good from God. And listen to Isaiah's warning. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who substitute darkness for light and light for darkness, who substitute bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and clever in their own sight. What was true when Isaiah said it nearly 3,000 years ago is true today as well. This is a perfect description of our world. Our world calls good evil, evil good rather, and good evil. It substitutes darkness for light and light for darkness. It calls bitter sweet and sweet bitter. Our world's grown backwards and twisted. Our world's eroded the line between good and evil. Our world's developed many shades of gray on issues that before God are certainly black and white. Our world has redefined good and evil. Even for so-called believers, moral convictions watered down to where we're essentially conforming to the world. The world bombards us with pressures to conform, to think the same way, to feel the same way towards good and evil that they do. Through cultural influence, through media, we become desensitized. We grow numb, we lose the ability to blush, we lose that sense of horror that these statements are trying to develop in us. We're deceived, we get brainwashed to love evil and hate good. Just the opposite of what God's telling us here. We, forget what they're doing, we must define good and evil as God defines good and evil. We must become more polarized in our views and our convictions. Stop letting this line, just blur. We've got to be polarized, just as this verse suggests. We must become more consistent in our practices. If I think something but I'm not doing it, that's no better. Do not buy into the spirit of the world. Don't believe or buy into, be deceived by empty, worldly, politically correct philosophies that oppose the wisdom and sovereignty of God. We're called to nonconformity and transformation. And so we've got to think about this as we work through these verses together. Here's another point that I really want us to see in this lesson. Love and morality stand and fall together. What happens in the world is it set love against moral conviction. To display any conviction for right and wrong as God defines it is labeled as intolerance, bigotry, prejudice, judgmental, and plain hate. To display any conviction for right and wrong is not the loving thing to do. But again, before God, love and morality stand and fall together. Listen to this statement in 1 John 4, beginning in verse 9. By this the love of God was manifested in us, that God has sent His only begotten Son into the world so we might live through Him. And this is love. Not that we love God, but that He loved us and sent His Son to be the propitiation for our sins. Do you recognize the implication in these statements as it pertains to our lessons? the nature of love as revealed by God, as demonstrated by God, the nature of love is rooted and grounded in the fact of absolute right and wrong. That is just a foundational implication in this passage we just read. Think about the term propitiation that defines love here for us. Propitiation is satisfaction or appeasement of divine wrath. And so the point is the death of Jesus appeased the wrath of God that would justly consume me in my sins. The death of Jesus satisfied the penalty that I deserved for my sins. Holy Creator God sent His only Son, whom He loved so much, to suffer and die for me and for you, who sinned against Him, who violated His moral laws, who loved evil and rejected what was good. This is love. And this love, again, is rooted and grounded in the fact of absolute right and wrong before God. If there's no sin, think about this. If there's no sin, if there's no right and wrong, if there's no good and evil, the basis by which we know love is useless. At the very best, it's good intentions that made no difference at all. I mean, that's the point here. But if, in fact, there is an absolute standard of right and wrong, for good and evil, then the basis by which we know love is more profound than we can even begin to imagine. Therefore, to display moral convictions in our attitudes, in our speech, in our conduct, is far from unloving, but is perhaps one of the most loving things we can do. Because again, in that, what are we doing? We're reflecting the light of God in this dark world. And so we can't back down away from doing what's right, being convicted about what's right, because someone tells us that's not loving. That's absolutely loving. But recognize this. Moral conviction is not self-righteousness. Unwavering moral conviction, again, that these verses are trying to develop and cultivate in us, does not justify arrogance or self-righteousness. The moral conviction demanded in these verses does not arise from within ourselves. It's not about our own opinions, our own feelings, our own sense of worthiness. It doesn't matter what I think or feel. Do you agree with that? You don't care what I think or what I feel. And I'm certainly not worthy. On the contrary, though, this radical stand, and it's radical, for right and wrong arises from and is in perfect harmony with the gospel of grace that you see in Romans 1 through 11. It's precisely the truth of the gospel that's going to develop in us this intense hatred for what's wrong, for what's evil. And it's going to develop in us this strong, intense love for what's good. The more we see holy God, the divine creator, the divine judge who's setting the divine standards for right and wrong, the more we get this. And at the same time, the more we recognize our utter sinfulness, our failures, and our helplessness before Him. It's going to cultivate this within us. We'll talk about this more in just a moment. And so let's think about this personally for just a moment. Do I abhor evil? Do I abhor evil and do I cling to what is good as we think about this? And I just have one scenario. I looked at different scenarios to think about in life, but I boiled it down to, edited it down to just one tonight. I want to think about our entertainment for a minute. I'm not going to talk about this forever, but just think about this. I don't have any show or movie in mind, but just want us to think about this principle, these principles. Let's be consistent. Let's be sincere in this. So bring to mind the shows and movies you watch. Bring to mind the music you listen to. Bring to mind the articles or books that you read. Do they help you hate evil? I mean, there's my face scrunched up again. I can't say abhor or hate without that scrunchy face. The shows you watch, the things you find entertainment in, do they help you hate evil? Do they help you love what's good? Cling to it? Or do they influence you to ultimately love and side with evil, to disconnect from what's good? I want you to think about your favorite shows or your favorite characters. And so as you're watching this, do you find yourself in situations where you're rooting for wickedness, for evil, rooting for fornication, rooting for adultery, encourage, you know, you're on the side of the character and what they're going to engage in is wrong before God. Maybe you find yourself rooting for murder. What's going on in our hearts? I mean, if we're honest when we're finding entertainment in that, what's going on in our hearts? Because again, these statements is more than just, I'm stopping some practices here. It's changing my thinking and it's changing my feelings. Abhor. It's an emotion and a mindset. Clinging. So again, so do you find yourself rooting for these things? Do you see clear lines between good and evil, right and wrong, or are those lines blurred? Recognize the how easily we can be influenced by these things without realizing it and just growing numb, desensitized, where we're not blushing. There's certainly no horror, no hatred for what's evil. Whether we admit it or not, our entertainment does impact our thinking and our affections. I may need to sacrifice some of my entertainment. If I'm a living sacrifice, I may need to sacrifice some of my entertainment. I may need to refuse to conform with the world in regards to some of my entertainment. I may need to seek the transformation that's found in God in regards to some of my entertainment. We won't talk about this a lot, and I didn't put it in the PowerPoint, but think about participation as well. What am I participating in? What conversations am I participating in? What activities am I participating in? And maybe go through the same exercise there as we think about abhor what is evil, cling to what is good. What am I participating in? We certainly associate with the world. Paul's clear about that a couple times in 1 Corinthians. We have association with the world. How can we not? How can we be light in the world and not have any association? But recognize association and participation are very different things. So please think about that as well. And so do I abhor evil and cling to good? So how do I do this? How do I transform my thinking? How do I transform my feelings? I mean, think about calling us to change our emotions, our emotional response to something. How do we do this? Suggest to you it's the cross. And isn't Jesus always the answer? Whatever the little kids are going to say, Jesus, you know, that's the answer to everything, right? But the cross. I want you to think about the cross. And specifically, I want you to think about the brutality and the savagery of it. I've got a great image of from the Passion of the Christ, just very graphic. I weighed putting it in there, just I didn't. And I'm glad I didn't. But if we can imagine, I want us to use our imagination. The brutality and the savagery. The sorrow. The pain. The blood and the gore. I mean, imagine the volumes of blood, the gore that would be associated with the cross. This is the cost of my sin. We need to see that when we see the cross. If I understand correctly, to satisfy the judicial payment, it was death that was necessary. I mean, judicially, death was what was required. But what we see in the cross is something that's so horrific. I mean, it's far beyond just death. It's shameful, painful, horrifying death. Perhaps it's the horror of the cross that's intended to help us gain an understanding of the horror of sin. And so then, as we fill up on the cross, as we learn to abhor evil, then we recognize we're in the darkness and we want to cling to every bright light of good that we can. The cross is going to help us with that. Jesus is going to help us with that. As we conclude, I want us to consider just three short passages together from the wisdom literature. Proverbs 8 and verse 13 says, "The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Pride and arrogance and the evil way and the perverted mouth I hate." Psalm 97 in verse 10. "You who love the Lord, hate evil. He preserves the soul of his godly ones. He delivers them from the hand of the wicked. Psalm 119:104. Through your precepts I get understanding, therefore I hate every false way. So think about this. Look at these passages and just sort of see these in your minds and think through what's being said in these three verses. If I fear God, if I love God, if I say I'm learning from God, I'm being taught of God, what must be true about me? I mean, if I fear God, if I love God, I'm being taught of God, according to these verses, what must be true about me? I hate evil. That must be true. Think about it from the other side. If I don't hate evil, if I don't abhor what is evil, what also is true about me? Do I really fear God? Do I really love God? Am I really learning from Him, being taught of Him? I can say it all I want, but if I don't hate evil, it simply isn't true. If I love God, I'll love what He loves, and I'll hate what He hates. If I cling to God, I'll cling to the things of God. I'll reject the things that directly oppose His sovereign will. We've got to stop messing around with sin. This becomes too casual in our thinking, in our emotions, in our behavior. We've got to stop messing around with sin. Please take out your songbooks. Let's fear the Lord. Let's love the Lord. Let's be taught of Him. And as this text helps us with, let's abhor what is evil. Let's cling to what is good. If your thinking, if your feelings, if your behavior is conformed to this world rather than being transformed to His good, perfect, and acceptable will, hope you'll repent now. If we can do anything to encourage you or help you, please come forward as we stand and sing.